Today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Money can't breathe and money can't see, but when I pull out a fiver, people listen to me. Hey everybody, Patrick here again. If you listened yesterday, you know that Scott Parks is alongside in the co-hosting chair riding shotgun today. And Scott, thank you very much for doing that, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And of course, as I mentioned yesterday, episode 711 is kind of the, sort of parallel to what we're talking about yesterday and today with the Kinks. So yesterday we talked about two albums from the RCA period, Muswell Hillbillies and Everybody's in Showbiz. And now, Scott, tell us what happened in 1973 when Ray Davies went full-blown into sort of this concept.
Yeah, in 1973, I think Ray Davies had a pretty rough year. I think his marriage was dissolving. He had some drug issues. I think at one point he had, you know, was unconscious from a drug overdose, or he collapsed from a drug overdose. And it might have seemed like they weren't even going to continue, or maybe Dave was going to have to take over for the band. So, you know, I think Ray was kind of in a different mindset than he had been previously.
Yeah.
But you could kind of hear, like we talked about yesterday, you could kind of hear where he was going, at least musically to a certain extent, with the previous two releases, where they were almost concept-ish albums. Mm-hmm. They weren't a full concept. So 1973 rolls around, and he's putting together a project called Preservation. And it was supposed to be a one release double LP, but it took him quite a period of time to get this going and ready, that the record label said, hey man, you've got to give us something.
Yeah.
So what he did is he actually he changed it up where it was going to be two different releases. So there's 1973's Preservation Act 1 and 1974's Preservation Act 2. And the themes are kind of going back a little bit to Muswell, where, you know, it's kind of a bleak time. But the themes of these records, it's basically like preservation. And there are three main characters in these. And Preservation Act 1 kind of acts like an intro to the full story. And it's closer to a regular Kinks album, where it's got just a bunch of songs. Preservation Act 2 is where he totally flips the script and starts into the full-blown theatrical version of the Kinks,
yep,
which they continue on for the next two albums after that. So again, the main theme of Preservation 1 and 2 is preservation, and it's from the perspective of three different main characters. There's Flash, there's Mr. Black, and there's the Tramp. And what's so crazy is this is 50 years ago, and we're still dealing with basically the exact same things that are happening in this. Flash is the greedy, money-grubbing, I'm all in it for myself person. You can maybe like look at him as an American oligarch, or the Russian oligarchs,
yeah,
who are just basically trying to do anything they can. They're super capitalist and they just want to make as much money and get as much stuff as they possibly can, regardless if it's going to destroy the environment, destroy their cities or towns.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Black is the Christian right here in America now.
Okay.
He is all about preserving the conservatism of England, religion and all of these types of things.
Yep.
And the Tramp is all of us who are having to deal with these two different
yeah,
dichotomies of, you know, politicians and of government. And we're all the ones that are kind of being like swept into the dustbin, and just we're just getting trampled all over by the people with the money or the people with the power. One or the other. So those are the main themes of both Preservation Act 1 and 2.
You know, we talked a little bit yesterday about the original reception, critical reception of Even Muswell, which obviously now is revered and Everybody's in Showbiz. But Preservation Act 1 and 2 really kind of fell flat when they came out.
Big time.
You know, and part of it is that you know, it was a difficult concept to grasp, right? And like, who wanted to really think about this stuff, you know, in the 70s? But, you know, there were a lot of people, the roots of that were all beginning. I mean, it was called the Me Decade, you know, and those things were starting to develop. You know, when you look at the cover of this record, too, which I think is a really kind of a fun cover, you know, it's got that looming figure sort of staring over everything. But it's also got, you know, unusually for the Kinks, right, here's the tuba is right on the front of this thing, right? And the horns are really prominent here.
They expanded the band from a four or five piece to like a 10 or 12 piece band with a full horn section with female backing singers. They literally transformed from a rock band into a theatrical troupe over the course of like a year.
Yeah.
They you know, completely transformed themselves, which I find fascinating.
It is fascinating. Yeah.
Bands don't do that.
No.
Especially bands that had the level of success that they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one reason why these four records were not looked upon kindly. And it kind of reminds me of the whole Dylan situation.
Mm-hmm.
So Dylan was revered by the folkies, and then he goes electric and everybody hates the stuff that he had put out immediately. Like,
yep.
They hated it immediately when he put it out. Then they all came around like, oh my God, he's awesome. And then he puts out Self-Portrait and gets completely slammed.
Yep.
Because it's not Highway 61. It's not Blonde on Blonde. It's not the stuff that he had then turned himself into.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the only artist that I can really kind of have a comparison to, in that he changed his style so many different times. And, you know, the Kinks, again, didn't do it all the time. But in this one particular case, in this 4-year period, they just totally like transformed into a totally completely different band. And again, like I said, it's fascinating.
Sort of a guy. I'm not rich, but I get by pretending that I know just what I'm doing. I'm a well-bred upper-class chap. I don't care much about this and that, even when I know there's trouble brewing. We think there's a change in the weather. We gotta learn to stick together. We see the thunder clouds in the sky. I wanna live, I don't wanna die.
I can understand if you grew up on, you know, Lola and You Really Got Me and Face to Face and Something Else and all that stuff. And then suddenly here's this band where he's adding a tuba and horn section and female characters and all that. It's got to be pretty disillusioning for you. You might have been tempted to say, forget it, man. I'm like, you know, I'm buying these guys' records.
I think a lot of people did say forget it.
Yeah.
And they didn't come back ever, maybe.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
They definitely didn't come back until Clive Davis turned them back into a rock band from this, which, you know, I'll give it to Clive Davis, because without him doing what he did, the Kinks probably completely dissolve after this theatrical period. It was not financially feasible for them to continue to do this. But, you know, coming from it, from my perspective, 50 years on, I love seeing bands that can learn and grow and change, and I love that. But like you said, I have some sympathy for people. I've posted these albums on a couple of Facebook groups I'm in and said, you know, don't listen to the haters. And people are like, you know, I don't hate it, but I don't like it, and I'm not going to listen to it. And it's just the way it is, you know.
Yeah.
If you lived it in real time, it's different than living it, you know, 50 years on and being able to kind of put it all together in perspective of their entire career.
Yeah, very well said. And I can understand if, you know, if you want the Kinks to be that guitar band, you know, and that's right. the way you want them. And that's, yeah, you're totally, you know.
And, you know, people are afraid of change.
Yeah, that's
people
right.
People are afraid of change. People like things to stay the same. And I'm one of those people. I hate yeah. certain changes. But when it comes to music, I have no problem with somebody that I like changing the way they sound to attempt to do something different.
Yeah.
I actually get bored when bands don't do that, when they just stick with the formula. I end up not even listening to them anymore after a period of time because it's just, it gets boring. So, but yeah, so, you know, getting into Act One, like I said, it's less of a concept album than the next three.
Yep.
It just kind of introduces some of the characters, and that doesn't even really happen until the last side, the second side.
Yep.
But there are some absolutely incredible songs on side one.
There are.
The first one of is Sweet Lady Genevieve.
One of my favorite songs. Yeah.
If you don't know Sweet Lady Genevieve, like the first time I put this on and that song came on, I was like, oh my God, this song is awesome. I love it so much. It's just such a beautiful, it's beautiful.
Once under a scarlet sky.
It's such a great Kink song, folks. And you really could compile like sort of the unknown greatest hits, you know, quote unquote, unknown greatest hits of the Kinks. And, you know, you would have this song would be on there maybe, you know, with Celluloid Heroes and some of the other ones too from this period, or just the RCA greatest hits maybe is
right.
Yeah, maybe that's the playlist you can make for everybody to go with these episodes. Yeah,
you know, you and I were talking offline the other day about how you can hear the Kinks in every band post Kinks.
Yep.
So it's like, I don't, they're not like the most popular band for like in the world, but they're one of those bands that almost every single musician looks up to and derives something from. Yeah. So Sweet Lady Genevieve doesn't really move the story along at all. It really doesn't have anything to do with the preservation, you know, act or preservation story, as at least in my opinion. One of the survivors inside one, that's an incredible Dave
yes,
Davies song.
It really is.
And that reprises Johnny Thunder, who I think was a character in Village Green.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of like an older Johnny Thunder, and basically he's just like, you know, I've survived, basically.
Yeah, whatever happened to him, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, he says, old Johnny Thunder looks a little overweight. You know, it's a really, really good song. So things kind of take a turn on side two of Act One, where they start to kind of get into the story. Money and Corruption is the first entrance of Mr. Black.
Yep.
And then that comes into Here Comes Flash, which introduces Flash and kind of gets the story going. we get into Preservation Act 2, where the story actually, you know, really, really comes to fruition on Act 2. Act 2 is a little strange. There are announcements. It's almost like little news clips in between songs. And I've read some reviews and people are like, I hate these announcements. But without the announcements, you can't get the story. So you have to listen to the announcements.
It has been rumored that a new People's Army has been formed by a certain Commander Black. A few minor incidents have already been reported, and further unconfirmed reports suggest that this is a definite attempt to overthrow the present government, which is led by Mr. Flash.
It's just such a great story and a great they did it so well, in my personal opinion, that I love it. And this is probably the record that people hate the most from the Kinks. Or the next one that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Those two are literally the ones that people absolutely cannot stand. And I love both of them.
And you could make the argument that some people would say it's not even the Kinks, right? That sounds so
correct.
Different from like the stuff you know. And I'll say Preservation Act 2 is the other one I don't have from this period. and because I don't have it, those are the – I mean, I'm missing – one early Kinks album, but these two are the other ones. And maybe I never got the very last one that came out on vinyl. But
Phobia.
Yes, I don't believe I have that one. So that's one I can probably pick up somewhere. But two questions I want to ask you here, Scott, and hopefully this can help us talk about Act Two a little bit more. Number one, what, I guess, impact did the fact that, as you mentioned, these two albums were recorded at the Kinks' own studio, right? So they no longer had those restrictions of time and money and engineers and the, you know, the studio footing the bill. What impact do you think that had? And two, I mean, do you think Ray Davies is writing these songs because he feels like there's an equal amount of all three of these sort of main characters in himself?
I think all of us have different sides of our personality, and we all at certain points in time might be a little bit selfish and might be, you know, a little bit righteous. And, you know, I think most of us, I would hope, are more of the, you know, I want to do good. I want to help people. And there's just varying bits of the other things that are there. So I think that probably is right. I don't know, but I think that kind of makes sense. I would say it's 100% that they have their own studio and they have their ability to do these albums the way they wanted to. I think it's 100% because they had that freedom. And again, I think he was coming from a completely different mindset than before.
Yeah.
I think he, again, had some drug issues and things like that. And we all know what happens when somebody might overindulge. They kind of change.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Their mind is different. And, you know, when you're under the influence of certain substances, you might start thinking differently.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think it probably did have a lot to do with the fact that they had the freedom to be able to do that. So, you know, in this one, it's really impossible to pick songs out from this one. You need to just listen to the whole thing. And if you listen to the entire thing and follow through with the story, it just makes sense. But I can't even really come up with a song that is one that is like worthy of me talking about specifically. You know, When a Solution Comes is is one of the earlier tracks, and that's it's where kind of Mr. Black is talking about his true motives and what he wants to do and kind of get back control. Money Talks is really good, talking about Flash's cynicism and his, you know, reason to be, which is basically that he wants to just get as much money. Shepherds of the Nation and Scum of the Earth, they kind of are battling back and forth. You know, there's a lot of things that kind of are happening right now, you know, with Mr. Black being kind of ultra conservative, ultra religious. It kind of makes you think about The Handmaid's Tale and those types of things where they're going to put women in, you know, in their place and whatever. It's just a fascinating piece of work that I think they completely pulled off.
You know, I was looking here. I wanted to pull a book out of my on my shelf to look something up, and I looked at Robert Kiskow's Guide to Records of the 70s, which is a really cool album guide, folks. He wasn't as quick to make knee-jerk reactions, I think, as some other critics were, and his judgments of the 70s records hold up really well. But what he calls these records in here, I knew he had a term for it. He calls these four original cast recordings, which I think is really interesting, right? It kind of works in one sense, right?
Yeah. This sounds like a Broadway show. And they went on a big tour.
Right.
And anyone who hated these two albums that saw the tour said it was incredible because they brought it to life on stage. You know, Ray Davies played Flash. Dave Davies played Mr. Black. Mm-hmm. They had a whole cast of characters on the stage, and they were acting it out on stage. And if I had a time machine, I would go back try to see one of those shows.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be amazing. So I think that it's exactly right. It's more, this is a cast recording of something that was going on inside Ray Davies' head.
Yeah.
So he had this playing out in his mind. They put it on vinyl and then were able to actually go out and do it live. And I, you know, from everything I've read about the tour, it worked 100% live. And some people just didn't get it when they were listening to the copy at home.
It's amazing that, you know, they took, you know, the whole cast, you know, out and all the backup singers and the
costumes.
Yeah, costumes. Incredible.
If anybody's never seen the front of Preservation Act 2, so we talked about the cover of Act 1.
Yep.
Act 2 is just basically a billboard that says Preservation Act 2, The Kinks, with Ray Davies in his Flash costume. And it's like a multicolored long jacket that he wore.
It's wild.
And it is wild. And then Dave Davies looks like a gangster.
Yep.
On the back cover. It's just awesome. So I just listen to, at least if you're going to listen to one of these all the way through, listen to Preservation Act 2 from beginning to end. Again, I like Preservation Act 1. It's really good. It probably has the best songs of the two. But Act 2, it just kind of puts it all together. And like you said, keep in mind that this is really a cast recording of what could have potentially been like a Broadway show.
Yeah. Absolutely right. And you know, it's so interesting that you made such a good point, Scott, when you said, you know, everybody that came after the Kinks is kind of influenced by the Kinks. As I'm listening to you speak and just thinking about this, those little announcements are not all that different from what a lot of hip hop groups put in when they did those little skits, right? Or those little breaks up. Yeah, it's really interesting. 100%.
I actually didn't even think about that. But, you know, you talk about like De La Soul is Dead.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of the De La Soul have those little tiny skits where it's just like kind of propelling the story of the album or leading up to the next song. And that's exactly what this did. It just kind of propelled the story from one track to the next. And it just was the cement, the glue that you needed to have this be a fully realized and easier to understand piece of work. You know, you look at something like Tommy from The Who,
mm-hmm.
that didn't really make a lot of sense. You know,
no.
when you listen to Tommy, like you could listen to that and not even realize that it's supposed to be a concept
right.
album.
Exactly.
You can't listen to this without understanding that it's a concept album because they force that upon
yeah.
you, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, I guess artistically speaking, probably Tommy is, you know, artistically better because it's, you know, not quite in your face. But in the perspective of just wanting to listen to it and understand the story, I think this kind of works a little bit better.
Even though Hey, everybody, this is Patrick, and going back to the original start of the King's RCA years with Scott Parks, I made a crack about the inmates running the asylum. Well, the original recording of this stretched almost to an hour, and we talked about all four of the final King's albums, including Preservation Act 1 and Preservation Act 2, which you just heard about. But for programming's sake, we're going to break the discussion up into two episodes. So this episode's going to end today, and then we're going to come back tomorrow for the conclusion, the final two albums, where things really get unusual for the Kinks, and they go full-blown into radio plays and all kinds of interesting stuff. And Scott's enthusiasm does not wane. So make sure to come back tomorrow and hear that. You can find Rockin' the Suburbs on the social medias at Suburbs Pod. Just look on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube for Suburbs Pod Podcast, Rockin' the Suburbs. If you want to send us an email, just send an email to rock@suburbspod.com. And if you have any thoughts on the Kinks RCA years, we'll get back to you eventually in an episode where we round up some of the feedback from these 3 days. I want to thank Scott Parks again. He has been an invaluable source of passion, knowledge, and enthusiasm on the Kinks RCA years. So come back tomorrow, as I said, and we'll wrap it all up for you. I'm Patrick Foster. You're listening to Rockin' the Suburbs, and we're going to play out with some more Kinks.
I think Norman's a really lucky guy to have you cook for him.
I don't know. Seems you don't have much time for me these days.
Oh, don't be silly, darling.
Well, it's true. All you think of is your work.